Party's over. それでも踊りたかった。眠れないから。情熱の日はいつしか、いつの日にか。鼻から気づいている。ホムラはいつか消える。で何もいらないはずだった。なのにまだ I'm so serious.
Hello, you're listening to the Talking Spirit AnimeCast. My name is Andrew, and I'm joined here with Chris.
Yo.
Today's episode is a post-mortem on Anime Strike. Technically, it's been, like, it's been 2 years now, I guess? It's only been 1 year, right? Yeah, it's been 1 year. It's been about 1 year since Amazon has seemingly left the anime sphere, and as we were talking in our last discussion, though, we thought it would be a cool idea to kind of look back and say, what did they do right? Because they did a damn good job, and we kind of miss them, right?
Yeah.
Oh my God, you're very sure about that. No, it's one of those things where we weren't sure when they were actually technically leaving, because it seemed like they were just they were piecemealing very small amounts out, and I think that was because they had a lot of, you know, still hanging contracts that they still wanted to kind of fulfill before they finally stopped. But yeah, after a year, it's pretty obvious that they're gone. I mean, an unpopular opinion here, very much so an unpopular opinion here, and Chris might even disagree with me. I kind of want Amazon to come back at this point. I mean, we are technically going into an age of a possible monopoly in our anime offerings, and I'll take anyone at this point. I don't want to have just one company. I mean, as much as it sounds great to have one company, one service that you subscribe to, it's not a good thing. It usually always leads to bad in most situations. Agree or disagree? Is that an unpopular opinion?
I'm mixed on that. I think the punishment was there, if for a lack of a better term. Basically, and we'll get into this at some point, is they did silly things that did not work for them. Now, they received the punishment, and now, yes, I kind of want them to come back, having licked their wounds and realized what it was that they had done, but it looks like they're just going to go in a totally different direction.
You know, I just had an amazing idea. With how much, well, he's technically no longer there, but you know, the whole space battle that has been going on between, you know, Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk, would have been really cool to have Elon Musk decide to throw his ring into anime. The dude is an anime fan. I mean, I don't know if people don't know that, but he is an anime fan. And this is a guy who is a multi-billion-dollar company owner. He's launching crap into space, and he's in company group photos with anime t-shirts. That's somebody right there. That is a fan right there. And I think he'd be somebody that would be on our side that actually wouldn't screw it up. At least he would have his pulse on the anime world. And I don't think he would mess it up as bad as as Jeff Bezos, but
yeah, the biggest issue right now is you have all these really big companies, and to get into the ring, you almost have to be equal to them. That's just why don't people move away from YouTube? Because they're too big. There's what, 5 different companies off the top of my head that are out there, and none of them are solid.
Yes.
How do you get away from YouTube? You have to go to the other company. You can't go to the other company because they like die the second that you go to them.
Yeah, and that was always the problem. Whenever there would be a big exodus of YouTube, it would always be, okay, there's this service over here, let's go over here, and then everybody goes over there, and the company literally can't handle the weight of the people hitting their servers, whereas YouTube, they got through all that growing pain a long time ago, and now they're fine because they were able to grow with that movement to video. And, I mean, my hat's off to, you know, companies like Crunchyroll that was able to build that over time, but they also had their issues, and they built their infrastructure over time, and we went through those hiccups. So Crunchyroll basically went through the same issues that we had with YouTube, and to have a new company just kind of jump up is kind of impossible at this point. They always have to kind of rely on somebody else. HIDIVE has to rely on, you know, VRV and Crunchyroll, and I'm not sure what they're going to do at this point. I'm sure they're probably just going to go back to HIDIVE and hopefully still manage to build that infrastructure they need for it. But I do agree with you that
VRV?
They were using VRV, yes. HIDIVE was on VRV. I'm not sure if they're going to continue because now Crunchyroll's bought out.
Yeah, I thought VRV was a part of Crunchyroll, so...
Yeah, VRV is technically Otter Media, I believe, which is...
Right.
...owns Crunchyroll. That's what I'm saying. I don't know if HIDIVE's going to have to go somewhere else, because that's where most people go for HIDIVE is VRV. They don't go straight to HIDIVE. At least that's what I usually hear. Most people, they just go straight to VRV because, I mean, they can get their Crunchyroll and their VR and their HIDIVE from the same location. But I do agree with you. It's the idea that it is sad to kind of rely on the big companies. Like when I'm here looking at what's happening with Crunchyroll and Funimation, Netflix is over here, but they're technically just throwing their own money in there. And they're not really doing what everybody else is doing but not seemingly enough of this buying of simulcasts. I do still want another hat in the ring, and it sucks to go, well, let's look at big companies and see which one can possibly stream it. It's Amazon. It's like, I don't really want to rely on Amazon, but at the same time, like I said, I want another person in the ring. I don't want it to be just one person and then Netflix over here going, yeah, we got 2 titles in the spring. Hey, we got 5 titles in the spring, and that's about it. So, and again, I have my issues with Netflix as well.
And the biggest frustration that I have with Amazon is that they are absolutely hurting creators, and it's like I'm stuck because as big as I was into Audible, it's really frustrating to know that because they keep slapping me with this big old warning every time I quote unquote cancel my subscription, you're going to lose all of your books. I've spent nearly $3,000 on your platform. You should make it to where I can keep my freaking books for a little bit longer. This is absolutely absurd. And yet all of my authors are sending me messages of, hey, we're not going to be on Amazon anymore or Audible anymore. And it's like, thanks, guys.
That's just, that's the whole problem with the whole subscription-based token system is it's like, you don't really own anything. Even though technically it's processing you to buy stuff. It's a fake buy.
And that is the one thing that, As far as digital stuff is concerned, that has always been one thing that I've always given Andrew. That is the one argument that I have always given to Andrew. It's like, you are absolutely correct. I technically do not own these things. I have purchased them. I purchased rights to them. Just like the whole Microsoft operating system. Technically, I don't own it. They can revoke my access to my own freaking computer at any point.
But that's even taking it a step further, because I'm fine. You can make a good argument of the idea of, you know, buying digital on a video game platform, because when you buy it, it technically is on your system, and, you know, forbid they don't make your system break itself after a while, you can still play it. You just can. There's a possibility in the future you can't download it anymore, which is perfectly understandable for the company to not continue to keep a server up for, you know, 30 years, but to have it, like, completely stop when you stop subscribing is ridiculous, or disappearing if you don't subscribe for too long. That is absolutely insane to me. Which, yeah. We'll get into other bad Amazon practices later.
Yeah, if I remember right, I've had my Audible account for nearly 8 to 10 years. And
back when it wasn't Amazon, right?
Huh?
Back before it was even Amazon, right?
I don't know.
Because didn't Amazon buy them?
It's very possible. I remember I've been with Audible for a really stupid long time. But yeah, it seems like at random it was suddenly linked up to Amazon, and I don't remember it becoming Amazon, but whatever. So I just maybe just kind of assumed it had always been Amazon. So it's very possible.
That was during the era of Amazon buying a lot of companies.
Well, I even first bumped into it. It was an old Windows phone that I think you gave me. That's how long I've had it. I just started an account with them, and they get roughly what, 10, 12 bucks a month. So you think eight to 10 years, and that's not counting the, at some point I went to the 2 books a month, system. And then on top of that, the buy three for 30 bucks, thing. So yeah, I've got gobs and gobs of money into this stupid company.
Yeah, it looks like launching Audible in 1998. In 2003, they reached an agreement with Apple to put their audiobooks on iTunes. 2008, Amazon announced they would buy Audible for $300 million. They got ripped off.
Oh my gosh.
They got ripped off. Looking back, they got ripped off. But it was a different time in 2008. I mean, Audible wasn't that big.
Well,
they definitely grew.
The authors that I was talking about, they suddenly their books, because these guys are people who, you know, just dump books onto Audible, and they were constantly, it was like 1 month they'd have like 3 books on Audible, and it was like, okay, I just pick my choice of the list of books that they have. And at some point it was like they just stopped producing books, and I would go to their personal page, and it's like, no, they have books coming out. Why are they not showing up on Audible? And then finally I was like, okay, I had hit one of them, and randomly it's down here for those who are listening to Audible. I'm like, okay, I'll just click there. Maybe they've got a message for me. And it's like, they were literally telling me, apparently they're getting like barely a dollar
scraps
per book. Yeah, compared to Google, who they don't have as much reach through Google, they're getting like $5 a book on Google. And it was like, yeah, I can see why you would want to a dollar versus $5. And yeah, you're missing out, but you are missing out on the reach. And
Amazon's counting on.
Yeah.
Is we're so big. It's just like Apple. You want to reach a huge audience, you're going to have to take a nice big chunk out of your paycheck, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to kind of juggle if I can still manage to gain the same amount of audience with a, you know, smaller audience, but same amount of
Well, and that's what we were discussing is the idea of is it worth fighting against the issues that are surrounding the video version of our podcast currently.
Yeah.
For those of you who are watching us, you know exactly what we're talking about. And there is issues involved with that. Then going into some of the other platforms, you might as well, I mean, but at the same time, just like I was talking about with the authors that I was talking about, I went ahead and canceled my Audible again, and then I'm debating on if I want to support these authors directly. I've got two particular authors that I do really like. Both of them are doing the exact same thing. Both of them have, and it's obvious that they are communicating or behind somebody who is doing this for them. Their particular websites point you to their Patreon. Each one of them has a tier on their Patreon for $40. So I let go of, for these two authors, my Audible account, which I'm paying $20 a month, to go to these two authors. If I signed up for both of their Patreons, I'm losing my $20 account for two authors at $40 each. So I'm going to be paying $80 to get their particular books. And they're the books that I'm listening to right now and I'm enjoying. But yes, that's four times what I'm paying right now because Amazon's being a butt.
Because Amazon's being a butt. Now, you haven't been able to find any way of getting, like, through Google onto Apple? Because they're on Google, right?
Yeah, they mentioned Google, but I don't know.
But no, it's... And that's the frustrating thing, is, and that's similar to our situation that we're going to be getting into with the anime. It's like, getting an alternative sometimes is a great thing. It's just sometimes it never... What the company does with it is the big question mark, and how that will affect the actual, you know, ecosystem of our thing, which is anime. Having Amazon enter the ring was like a, I don't know. I mean, and some people are going, I didn't even know they had video content. But when they come into the ring and they have an offering, it's like, okay, that's cool, but what are you going to do with it? And unfortunately for us, the anime fan, what they ended up doing with it was kind of detrimental to the fandom in a way. It broke our trust for big companies like Amazon, but at the same time, I think hurt a lot of shows. And that's because it's similar to the Netflix situation, where the way that they're offering us the content, it pulls it away from a lot of people, a lot of eyes. A lot of people are just either not going to be able to access it, or they're just going to go, I don't want to bother with that. Because obviously their subscription service and stuff like that wasn't to a lot of people's likings. So, yeah, I'm not quite sure how I want to go through this outline. I was kind of planning on running through a history of Amazon Prime and Amazon Strike. Yes, the anime strike thing. You guys remember Anime Strike? Going through all that stuff. But I think the big thing of the reason why I kind of wanted to do this podcast, and something that kind of built up my desire to do it even more as I was putting an outline together, is I think that, yeah, granted, I kind of want it to be a thing where if Amazon hopefully does listen to this, they can learn from it. But also, I think a lot of other companies can learn from Amazon's mistakes. And I think that some companies did take note. I don't, there's nothing that in my mind, every single anime streaming service had to have had kept their eyes on Amazon. It was a huge company dipping into what they were doing. Obviously, they were keeping an eye on it. I think it's I almost want like this vision into, as a fly on the wall or whatever, into these boardrooms as they're like, guys, Amazon's getting into the anime market. They just released Cabinet of the Iron Fortress. This isn't good. What's happening? Of course, they probably knew back when it was first licensed. They knew Amazon was doing it. They have their people. They have communication with Japan, obviously. And these companies were obviously probably saying, Amazon put a bid in for this show. do you want to beat it, basically. But I just want to be a fly on the wall when they're, yeah, they have that panic moment of, oh crap, Amazon's getting into this, we have another competitor, and they have a lot of money. And then having, like, be the fly on the wall for, like, the, you know, the following meeting where everybody comes in and says, well, that screwed up. Like, guess we don't have to worry about these guys. Yeah, what's going on? Yeah, they're screwing up pretty bad.
Even when we mentioned it last week, it's such a nuanced thing, because there's so many different things that kind of happened all at the same time. It was like we were getting hints that Netflix was going to be jumping into the mix as well. There was the kind of, like, we're going to discuss a little bit later, the whole double paywall thing. There was so many things going on at the same time that it was like, this is absolutely a cluster. If you've ever seen one, of the perfect storm of reasons why Amazon Anime Strike failed, is just, it happened, and it was actually a beautiful thing to watch.
Well, that was a thing, because it really did feel like Amazon going into anime was a direct response to Netflix going into anime, because obviously Amazon Prime and Netflix are competitors, and it really did feel like at some point it seemed like anime, or it wasn't really technically Anime Strike when they first started, it was just, they had, I think their first offering was Cabinet of the Iron Fortress. That's the first one that I can actually see. Now, they've had anime on Amazon before, but it was always somebody else's license put on Amazon, and you can rent it or buy it from them. It wasn't a actual subscription service, whereas Cabinet was like, oh wow, they're going to try this whole simulcast thing. They're releasing this on a weekly basis. It was something that they were actually taking serious. And like I said, I think it was a direct response to Netflix, because I do believe that Netflix had offerings before then. So now, if you can debate if it was a response to Netflix, or if it was, you know, somebody that watches Crunchyroll and says, hey, let's ask Jeff Bezos if we could do this.
Yeah, I'm almost convinced it was probably a pet project.
And that's the thing. It feels like it was. It feels like Timmy in this one department said, hey, man, it'd be really cool if we can have anime on our service. And they're like, what's anime? And they're like, oh, well, let me get you this slideshow. I have a slideshow that I can show you. All right, you get this much money. You get 1 year. Go for it.
And obviously, it was somebody who did have an idea of the otaku culture, because otherwise they wouldn't have known about Noitomina. That's a very specific, yes, that was a very specific one that, how did you, if you don't know what you're doing, why would you go after Noitomina? Because even you and me, when we were talking, why Noitomina block? That's a very specific, high production value, true. But unless you know, unless you've been into anime for a little while, and I'm not even saying it, you have to know what you know, you have to have at least have a more than surface level anime culture. You have to know that you like Noitomina to go into the Noitomina block.
And that just means that Timmy from that one department that showed the slideshow knew what really good anime was, so they went for Noitomina block, obviously.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, because I think, and this is probably jumping ahead of things here, but I guess we should probably just start doing that, and we can start running through that kind of stuff, is I did kind of write down the history of our kind of news bits that we did, so the dates might be off on the month, but I kind of took them from those particular discussionals, what we, you know, discuss them actually happening with these particular seasons. But yeah, like I said before, definitely Cabinet of the Iron Fortress was their first, it seems like it was their first offering for anime that was simulcast, because it kind of felt like it came out of nowhere, like suddenly on nowhere, Cabinet of the Iron Fortress coming, I'm stupid excited for it. Obviously, a lot of people are stupid excited for it because it is from the, you know, the director and stuff from Attack on Titan. It wasn't the same writer. It was just them doing their own thing because they'd been doing Attack on Titan before, and it felt very Attack on Titan, but it was Wit Studio doing their own basic version of that, and so a lot of people, obviously, from the hype that is Attack on Titan, were excited for Cabinet of Iron Fortress. So obviously when it was coming up, and this was, looks like it was spring 2016, people obviously were really stupid excited for it. And what happened when it finally came out? Everybody's looking around like, wait, where is it at? Where is it at? Where's Cabinary? It was on Amazon. It was on Amazon Prime. And at that time, I don't think people were... Yeah, people were really mad because obviously there's a lot of people that don't have Amazon Prime. And I think that was like the first, you know, obvious hiccup that Amazon was already having was that, okay, they're starting out. And obviously, and I don't blame them at this point because you can't expect a company that offers other things to just jump right in and say, let's buy, you know, 15 titles. I just don't see it. I don't see them trying to compete on a level of, we have equal offerings for this season as any other company, come watch our shows. Their whole thing was, we have Cabinet of the Iron Fortress. Well, they...
Well, and
I would
and
argue,
I think,
and many people would argue that I don't think they said a single damn thing.
I think Cabinary of the Iron Fortress was really just kind of a luck of the draw, because that's an Noito Mina block as well. They just
it was a Japan thing as well, because people also have to remember that a lot of this was kind of, I think a lot of this was also influenced by Amazon Japan. I think Amazon Japan was going, hey, we need to have anime titles on our service. You want Prime over here? We got to put anime on here. And yet, like I said before, they were already getting a lot of other titles, but they were all old titles. They weren't new titles. They weren't currently airing titles. And so I do think a lot of this, so people don't get us wrong, I think a lot of this was influenced by Amazon Japan. They were trying to get big over there, and I think they were trying to launch Prime over there to be successful, and I think... Obviously, you can't do that without anime, which does make me more surprised now than ever that Amazon Japan wasn't able to keep that going and did not influence them enough to do it properly. Because now, granted, I think they did a lot right. I mean, they were doing better than Netflix with just having the titles available on a weekly basis. That's a huge thumbs up for me. It didn't screw that part up, but it is odd that keeping that in mind, it seems odd that they didn't have more offerings and that it didn't last longer than that. But I think that, again, I think that's the thing of somebody probably over there was going, hey, you want Amazon Prime to work over here? Yeah. How do we do it? Get anime on there. And they're like, oh, okay. You have a year. Go at it. Let's see what you could do. And they're like, okay, well, how much money do we have to spend? It's what, oh, some stupid cartoon thing. Here, have this much money. Can't really do much with this. Sure, I guess we'll make one deal with Noitamina. I totally expect, like, they probably blew most of that budget on just securing that agreement with Noitamina. And that's what we'll obviously get into with when I think it was early 2017. That's when we first seen our first, like, this is a Noitamina show, which was The Great Passage, I believe, was their first title that they end up having on there. That was Noitamina. Am I right? Am I wrong?
No. Attack on Titan was. Oh, I'm sorry. Not Attack on Titan.
No. Cabinary of the Iron Fortress.
Cabinary of the Iron Fortress.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think the other one was on there, too. There was two of them before Great Passage.
Battery was the other one. Yeah. Battery. Battery. So, yeah, that makes sense then. So, that would see their launch in 2016. That would see their launch of Cabinet of Iron Fortress. They followed that up with Battery. And then... It wasn't until 2017, that was when they launched Anime Strike. So that's where I'm getting mixed up. So they already had these Noitamina shows starting out in 2016. And then at some point, January 2017, they're like, hey, guys, we're launching Anime Strike. And this is when Amazon decided to, I think, honestly, get into the anime market. Because this is the point in which they essentially said, okay, people, come to our service. Essentially said, hey, we're trying out this thing. Can you guys help us out? And they launched the Anime Strike service. And that's where they said, okay, we have essentially seven shows. They launched with six shows. So they had The Great Passage, Vivid Strike, Chi Sweet Home, Chin-Chan, Scum's Wish, and Onihei. And again, that's a huge effort. I mean, we see more there than we typically see with other outside Crunchyroll Funimation services like, you know, High Dive pull off. So they were putting some money into this. This is no joke, some money right here.
And all of those were pretty solid shows, if I remember right.
Yeah. I don't remember what Chin-Chan was, but the other ones definitely were up there. Vivid Strike technically was a spinoff of a very popular series. But this is where things start getting really shaky. Well, technically, they were already shaky back with, you know, Cabaneri and stuff, mainly because we did see some delays of episodes. There was some weeks where they were a day late. I think they had one time where they were a week late, or am I misremembering?
I don't know.
But they weren't that bad. They technically weren't that bad. I honestly was like, this is not going to be a... I think we mostly managed to watch every week on the same day. So they were doing good. I seem to remember there was one day where the subtitles were gone for like a day. And we had a delay watching.
Now that you mentioned that particular thing, yes, it seems like there was a couple of issues at the beginning that we kind of just went, eh, it's them getting used to the whole system. Yeah. And that we're fine with that. It wasn't a super consistent
thing. I don't think we had a week delay. Maybe it was one other show that I'm thinking of that they did later. But they were doing good. They were doing weekly releases, like I said, which is I wasn't expecting that, and I was really happy that they did that. But I think the big problem that I think the first big hiccup that Amazon ever had, and of course, they already had the hiccup in the idea that they were technically only offering like one show and they were expecting people to pay for a Prime account to come watch it. That was obviously an issue. Thankfully, a lot of people did have Prime accounts already. let's be honest. A lot of people probably just said, hey, mom, can I use your Prime account? You buy a lot of crap from Amazon. Let me use your Prime account so I can watch this show. But it still does suck because, and especially back then, that was the only thing you could do was buy a year of Prime. There was no offerings of saying, I'm going to buy, you know, 2 months and then I'm going to cancel my subscription. You literally had to buy a year. And I think now they have it where you can, if you cancel, they'll give you your remaining balance back, which I think is nice. But the big upset here, so this would be Strike 2, technically. No pun intended. They launched Amazon Prime or Strike, and their thing was, okay, hey guys, we have thousands of anime and films available that you can watch right off the bat. We're starting off with some exclusives. We have The Great Passage, Vivid Strike, Chi Sweet Home, Chin-Chan, Scum's Wish, and Onihei. We also are bringing back the catalog of Nanoha, which was awesome at the time. $5 a month. And you're thinking, wow, $5 a month? That's amazing. Great. Cool. Thousands of titles. New simulcast. $5 a month. Let's go do it. Require a Prime account. There was the big stink. This was Strike 2 right here. This is where we're like, so wait. You have to get an Amazon Prime account. Yes. Then you have to pay $5 a month for Anime Strike Channel. Yes. That seems like a bit much. Yeah, but HBO's doing it.
And I think that was really what they were trying for. And it's
what they were.
It's kind of silly, but basically what they were thinking along, and I think that we even mentioned it, it's kind of backwards thinking. And
yeah,
because they were thinking, I am providing you a cable service, and this is effectively a package. You're going to be buying...
Yeah, and they were doing that. They had a lot of packages on their service. They had a lot of companies that were, you know, on their channel on Amazon Prime that they were offering packages for. And so they figured, okay, well, let's make a package for anime. But this is that first problem that you're running into, is where you're not realizing you have a different market here. This isn't HBO. This isn't somebody looking for Game of Thrones or something. This is people that are already on other services that... You now have a couple of their titles over here, and now they're leaving their, you know, already established norms of, say, $5 a month to come over here, and you're like, well, yeah, you're going to need a Prime, you're going to need a Anime Strike channel account, and yeah, that's exactly what they said, and I had to go dig up the quote that they had back then, but when somebody asked, it was Decider, when they asked Amazon, like, hey, are you going to lower the price here? Their response was, we wanted to create a separate curated channel apart from Prime Video. This allowed us to go deeper into the content, dedicating marketing and creating benefits specific to this audience. Additionally, subscribers will find much more anime content as part of the subscription than what they would be found on Amazon or Prime Video, which is similar to channel subscriptions like HBO and PBS Kids. As an example, besides the Prime benefits like two-day shipping, Twitch Prime, Prime Music, Prime Reading, membership also opens up new doors, more convenient ways to shop, like Prime Now. And again, the bingo, right there. They literally just said it. Their mentality was subscription channels. Their mentality was, you buy DirecTV, and then you pay a little extra to get HBO. Their mentality was cable. Their mentality was standard television, and it doesn't work in both online streaming, and it does not work for anime. It's just, again, backwards thinking, like you said. And that was, again, their biggest screw up that they did, I think. Honestly, I think that was, and I think no matter what happens, when a new company jumps into the anime sphere, no matter what happens, they're going to get criticized for something. But this is one case where I was like, I can't defend this. Like, we were defending Amazon back when they had Cabinary. It was like, okay, yeah, it sucks, but you just need Amazon Prime, and Prime is this. And it still sucked then, because we were technically saying you would have to, and we acknowledged it too. I'm not saying that we were ignorant of it. We technically had to say, hey, guys, if you want to watch Cabinary of Iron Fortress, you have to pay $60 a year, which technically wasn't that much in a monthly basis. You just had to pay it up front. It sucked saying that, because it was only for one show. And it would have been easy to have suggested to people to get Prime when it came to Anime Strike, but it was hard to sell to people when they had a double paywall. There's no defending it. That is a stupid decision, no matter how you look at it. And again, it was them looking at their other services and thinking that anime was going to be the same.
Anime is a weird one this is something that I wish a lot of these companies would realize when they jump into the pool. It's like, I think even Netflix is kind of, they're I think they got it to a point, but they're missing the bigger picture at the same time. One of the things that these companies, I don't think, realize, and this is one of the quote-unquote nice things that's going to come out of the whole Crunchyroll or being bought out by Funimation, is at least that's one less subscription that we're going to, at some point, we're not going to have to pay it for anymore. Now, it might go farther away from us by going on to only PlayStations. For all I know, I hope they don't get that bold. But the funny thing is we kind of have hinted at it, is do you realize how many subscriptions that you have to be into the anime sphere? you have to have a subscription for Crunchyroll. You have to have a subscription for Funimation. We were talking at that time. What was the Sunrise Channel at this? What I don't remember what company that they had started there.
Gundam had its own channel. Yeah. Sunrise. Yeah.
They had a subscription. If you would like to have a subscription, we'll take away the ads, but they had something that they were trying to get started there.
If you don't want to see Gunpla ads, subscribe.
And then there was, at the time, there was also Hulu. You could do Hulu, but everything that was available on Hulu was on Funimation, so it wasn't really that bad. You could also technically get a subscription with the Anime Network. I think they've kind of
Anime Network was around the time, and that technically was Sentai. That was High Dive before High Dive. And you had Daisuke, which was the other channel. Daisuke was the one you're talking about. So yeah, when Cabinary came out, we had Crunchyroll, Hulu, Amazon, Funimation, Daisuke, Anime Network. That was before Netflix. And then Netflix was around. Well, not before Netflix. Netflix had shows before Cabinary. What I mean is, on that particular season, Netflix didn't get anything. Right. But you probably had a Netflix account at the time because you thought that they were going to have another show. And you possibly had shows coming out in spring 2016 from Netflix. They were shows that were probably aired, you know, 2 months prior or 6 months prior in Japan that were finally being dropped on Netflix. So you probably had a Netflix account at that time. So that's 7 accounts.
Right. And if you consider, if you give them a lot of leeway, $10 a month, $10 a month per subscription. And yes, there is a lot of subscriptions that are a lot higher than $10 a month. I can think of Crunchyroll off the top of my head. I haven't looked at the Netflix in a while, so I don't know if where they're at right now. But just that on itself, $10 each, that's $70. Just per month.
And granted, Hulu's offerings are typically always Crunchyroll or Funimation stuff. So I don't remember a time where Hulu got an exclusive. I want to say that something Funimation was only available on Hulu. I can't remember. Was it One Punch Man? Something was exclusive there. I think it was only one time they did that, though.
They were doing exclusives at one point. I don't remember who was working with them, but they have since just given up and are just working through Funimation right now.
Which are the worst, because you can get a subscription with Hulu and still have ads. That just boggles my mind.
No, they did at some point get rid of that.
They didn't get rid of it. They just made you pay more.
The Super Premium Plus. You buy the Super Premium Plus. More. It was like
$16.
Yeah, if you got premium, then you had access to devices. And then Super Premium Plus, and then you could finally get rid of the ads.
Yeah, and what sucks is it's not even an option, because the ads are ridiculously long if you don't pay that extra. They're ridiculous. Like, I had one time where something was not playing on Funimation. So I'm like, okay, it's on Hulu. I'll watch it on Hulu. I'll get a subscription. I buy the subscription, and I'm sitting through these long ads, and I'm like, I'm literally not going to do this. I'm literally not. I'm already paying you. I'm literally not going to sit through these ads. This is ridiculous. We're getting so sidetracked. But yeah, like I said, it's a sad thing, because I think they launched on a good foot. It's just, I don't know what was going through their head when they said that they wanted to do the channel system, because it literally, and again, I understand this mentality of, okay, we have to make this make, and that's probably what their mentality was. We have to make this make money. If we're going to get all these companies to be on board with us putting their stuff on there, on Prime, it's going to have some extra money coming in. And it's so backwards thinking, I think, for the company itself, because Amazon is used to losing money to make money. That's literally their model. They lose money to make money. I know some people might understand what that means, but take, for instance, their Prime. the idea of launching Amazon with the Prime shipping thing, they lost money. They lost money to the point that they got so popular that they made money. The reason why they were like, if you had a problem with your buy, they'll just throw you the money back, or they'll say, here, we'll pay to ship it back, just throw this label on it. They lost money doing that. It was them eventually getting to the point where they were so big and so much stuff was flowing that they started making money. That's where the money was. They had to lose money to make money. And so it's so weird that now with something like this, why didn't they decide? And maybe the answer to my question really is Cabinet of the Iron Fortress. Maybe it is Noitamina, because like I said, you only needed a Prime account back then to watch those shows. It wasn't until 2017 that they said pay extra. It seems like, why wouldn't you let your company lose money, get all these titles on here, pull the anime fandom into your market, into your platform, and then throw that extra cost on there?
It's actually kind of funny that you mentioned that, because one of the beefs that the authors I was talking about, one of the beefs that they were talking about was the free exchange thing, where yeah. if you don't like an Audible book, you could return it and get a new Audible book. And they were saying that it's really hard to quantify how much money they're technically losing because of that free exchange.
They might as well put
that
book in a library.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. You're not going to, you're basically just putting your book inside of a library and people are you know, checking it out for no cost. Yeah. And that's the thing. It is similar to like eBay, where Amazon is very unseller friendly now. For good reason. They make Buko's money. They keep the people there. Their customers are happy. Their mentality is customer first at that point. So it doesn't serve the seller well at all. So yeah. So I think that's it for that. So yeah, obviously people were upset. They again launched and it was so funny because at the time they launched Anime Strike, it was like begging to have the memes made of it. You create a service that obviously is going to upset people. Like, I don't see a single person in that boardroom being like, yeah, they're going to be perfectly fine with paying an extra $5 to get this. HBO does it. You know, it's just like any other channel service, subscription services. Obviously, people are going to be perfectly fine with it. And I could totally see that Timmy guy that was off, you know, suggesting it to begin with in the corner going, yeah, that's not going to work. And then they chuck him out the window like the comic strip. But yeah, that didn't fly well. So obviously, you know, the joke came out of, you know, Amazon strike, I'm striking against it. All the strike jokes comes out. I mean, it's not going to... It was a cool logo. I mean, branding and everything. I think it was cool, but it was definitely starting on that foot. You're asking for it. You're definitely asking for it. Quickly after this, we have, you know, Amazon trying to... And they tried to kind of soften the blow with the Comixology thing, which I thought was cool. I honestly, myself, as somebody that was already subscribed to Amazon Prime, I thought it did soften the blow a little bit to get something extra out of it, which I think is where the Comixology thing came from. Which they basically gave you a free manga every month. And like I said, I don't think it technically saves anything, but it was a way of softening that blow. And I think they launched with Blue Exorcist and Parasite, which technically Parasite at the time was gaining, you know, it was obviously popular because Parasite, the adaptation was already out. So yeah, I don't know. It was a nice effort, but I don't think it technically was going to save anything in that regard. Anything on that one? Any response? Were you excited about Comixology stuff? I guess technically you didn't really access any of it.
No, I didn't access it, but I honestly didn't even know that Comixology was linked into Amazon Strike, just truth be told. So that was a news bit that I completely missed.
Amazon had Comixology, so it worked. another buyout. Yeah, I think going on into July 2017, that's when we kind of seen them getting like a pretty good boost in the titles they had available to them. And then into October 2017, again, they're still kind of keeping that momentum. That's when they got Inuyashiki, and I think that was a huge grab for them because that had a lot of buzz going around it. For me personally, Yuki Yuna the Hero was great. Land Illustrious was a huge one because I know that that was a title that a lot of people were going, this title you need to keep an eye on. I know a lot of content creators were going, don't sleep on Land Illustrious. Well, technically, I think a lot of them waited until way late into the series to really kind of acknowledge it, but people were acknowledging it, and people were saying, check this out. And it had the similar situation as Cabinet of the Iron Fortress, where people wanted people to pay attention to it, but nobody could access it. And I think I this is one of those things where I kind of honestly want to look at like metrics of pirating sites to see if this things like Land Illustrious, things like Cabinaria, seen them see traffic boom. Because it's obvious people weren't watching it on Amazon. And I think that's a similar case to things like, you know, big Netflix titles. They're probably not watching on Netflix because it's that extra distance you have to go, that extra pay you have to make just to watch something over here. Well, technically for Netflix, it's just being able to access it in general at the time that it's being released in Japan, but that's a story for another time. But yeah, Girls Last Tour, Land Illustrious, Inuyashiki, Himoto Amaro-chan getting a sequel, all that stuff technically was huge for Amazon to get, and it, unfortunately, I think, mostly is squandered because they were still in that period of time of Anime Strike subscription, so.
Yeah, it seems like what, Banana Fish was the last one that we technically watched? I mean, because every one of them that you're mentioning, okay, just off the top of the head, these are all Noitamina Block. From the beginning of Amazon Strike, we got Cabinary of the Iron Fortress, Battery, Great Passage, Scum's Wish, Saikano, How to Raise a Boring Girlfriend, Flat. So that was, what, the second season or third season? Second season. Then Dive 2, Dive Explanation, Inuyashiki, which Andrew mentioned a moment ago. After the Rain, I think we went hard on that one. Watakoi, Love is Hard for an Otaku. Banana Fishes seems to be the last one I seem to remember.
Vinland.
Amazon Strike. Huh?
That was, yeah, Banana Fish was the last of Amazon Strike's offering, but they still had, like I said, I think that kind of, they already had licensed Vinland Saga, so Vinland Saga was their last title that seemed like they had on their platform.
That's not Noitamina Block, though. I'm trying to remember when the Noitamina Block came
So the last Noitamina would have been, yes, Banana Fish. That seemingly is when their contract ended, because right after that, The Promised Neverland was, you know, on Funimation and stuff. Of course, that also was an Aniplex title. So there is the argument made there that that was something that was possibly pushed by the fact that, you know, Aniplex is obviously going to have it on their platform, which is Funimation at the time.
Yeah, it seems like Sorens on Mai was on Crunchyroll. The Kappa
Funimation?
Boys.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I think it might have been Funimation, but yeah.
Yeah, it's on. It says it's licensed by both Crunchyroll and Funimation, but that could be just because everything's changed now.
Yeah. So yeah, definitely Banana Fish was the last one. Promised Neverland was available elsewhere. Sarazanmai was elsewhere. Given definitely was Crunchyroll. They were pushing that hard. Psycho Pass, I believe, went on to Netflix as well and Funimation. So yeah. God, they have such good shows in Noitamina Block.
Yeah, right.
So many good shows. So yeah, it was a sad time because I honestly wanted them to be successful. It's just they weren't putting their good foot out there with the subscription service. And obviously in January 2018, after a year of the whole service, Amazon's anime strike shut down. They still had their shows available there, but, and again, they were still continuing to release the Noitamina stuff. So, and it was kind of sad too, because you had the shutdown of the channel that is Anime Strike, but they still had titles there and they were still simulcasting. And this is where they kind of reverted back to how they were back in pre Anime Strike days, where it was just, all you needed was an Amazon Prime account. So again, it was easier to sell on the idea of watching it there because you didn't have to have that second subscription. And so it worked. But yeah. And then finally, the last bit was in December 2019. That was obviously the month of the last episode of airing of Vinland Saga. And that was seemingly the last simulcast show that they had on Amazon's platform. Again, they still have other anime titles that come onto the platform then and still now. It's just they're all technically old titles that are not being simulcast. So it's kind of a different story. So, yeah. And so, yeah, what were the issues outside of the double paywall that Amazon had? And I know we mentioned earlier the subtitle issues. They had issues here and there where I think the issue with missing subtitles is definitely something that was, again, early on, and I didn't really see much of it. But I do know that I want to say at least one episode of every season, I would have one episode where a show would have delayed subtitles, which honestly is really bad, especially for somebody like me. I think for a lot of people, it doesn't bother them because they don't really know what's technically being said to begin with. But I think as somebody that does know what's being said, it is extremely jarring, because when I'm watching anime and I'm watching subtitles, obviously, I'm connecting what is being said in Japanese to the subtitles. And so that helps me often cases catch where the subtitle is technically wrong. Or I guess there's a lot of cases where they make a subtitle something either more strong than, typically it's them making it more strong than what is actually being said. So if they say something like, you know, why you, they'll change, for some reason they'll subtitle it as, you son of a bitch, or something like that. It's like, that wasn't that mean. Like, what he said was not a cuss word. So
I think we've discussed
Tim A
that
or whatever.
Tim A, yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of those that's
that
really annoying.
B word or something. It's like, they're not saying that. They literally say the B word now. They find it funny to say that word now.
They do that in reference to... And even that one's kind of a slangish. It's more.
And often in case they're using it as a slut.
As a slut, yeah.
Yeah, it's
and
not
I don't,
the same
I don't know.
Meaning.
I don't know if that's really, because they do that in a lot of cases with gaiders. And yes and no, I guess you could call them that. But even that one.
It's
is
an assumption
kind of
they're loose, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, they like to sleep around or whatever. But yeah, the delayed subtitles drive me nuts. I cannot stand it, because that's mainly why. And granted, it's also a case where you're hearing somebody say something, and then now you're seeing subtitles, and the subtitles on the screen when there's nobody talking. It does feel weird.
Yeah.
It feels off. It feels like the audio is. Have you ever watched a show where the audio is off by like a fraction of a second? It drives me crazy. That's why whenever I edit my audio to my video on my YouTube videos, I literally will sit there for hours. I will have it completely zoomed in, and I will try to perfectly line it up.
Yes, that is. I completely agree with it, especially with Funimation and how bad their app is on the Roku. I get that all the time. And it's absolutely the most annoying thing because it, like I said before, it's literally once per time playing it. I have to reset the entire thing, start that episode over again, just because I will not sit there and listen to, for instance, in Log Horizon, Nyanta and Serada talking to each other, and Serada has Nyanta's words. Not going to happen. It's annoying as all get out.
It is absolutely frustrating. Obviously, the second big... That'll be the second. So, yeah, the first issue had been the second paywall. The second issue, obviously, was the subtitle issues they had. I think that there was a small issue with them being delayed in releases, but like I said, I think they were doing really well, and surprisingly well, especially with, like we said, with one of their first offerings was Cabaneri, and we didn't have too much of an issue with getting them on time, and that's a good thing. I think they started on a good foot with that. The third, obviously, was the slim pickings. That, and I think that's an issue with other services, like, you know, again, I know that they're having to fight against some big dogs, so it's understandable, but things like, you know, Sentai Filmworks and High Dive and Anime Network, having such a small offering, it's very difficult to have, you know, you wanting to go in there and pay for their service. Now, again, they always try to back it with saying, but we have 1,000 titles over here that you can watch, and that's similar to what technically... Sentai Filmworks is doing, and they're saying, okay, we have our entire back catalog of Sentai Filmworks, which are phenomenal titles they have in their backlog. But Amazon is a difficulty because they were offering other people's content, and they were offering really old titles, which, again, has its own market. There's a lot of people out there like, yeah, sweet. I have, you know, they had, like I said, the entire backlog of Nanoha. Having that back catalog, and I think they also did Macross. I might be wrong. I probably am wrong. Having that back catalog is cool for people that do like that back catalog and they want those older titles, but as we've mentioned before, the aspect of people wanting older titles is very slim. The lifespan of shows is so, so short. The Great Passage is a huge example of this. They took forever to get The Great Passage up. I remember when they first launched Anime Strike, their statement was, we have The Great Passage, we have Vivid Strike, we have Cheese Sweet Home, but we don't know when they're going to be available. And UK was streaming them. UK Amazon was streaming them. They just didn't know when they were going to do it in US. And you give that break there, people are either going to pirate it or they give up. And that's the worst because... by the time you release it, and they did this with The Great Passage, I wanted to watch it. I wanted to watch it so bad. By the time they released it, guess what? We were moving on to the next thing. And that's what happens. And that's one of those sad truths. And it's something that we deal with personally. We've had people in the past go, hey, cover old shows. Hey, review old shows. What's the problem? Time and engagement. We have a huge majority of our listeners want the now. They want the shows coming up. They want our opinion on what is airing right now because what's old is old. What's next season? Let's move on. What's next season? Let's move on. And so if you have any, and this is the issue that Netflix faces on a regular basis, having a show come out the following end of the next season, people have moved on. They don't care about your show. And we're talking like popular shows. Think of Little Witch Academia. What more popular show can you get than Little Witch Academia? And guess what happens with the TV series? They delay it. And guess what? How many people talked about that show? Very few. People were moving on. They either had already pirated it back then, and then the people that were finally seeing, oh crap, it's now available, they're like, but I have this new stuff, and technically that's old, and people have already done talked about it. I've already seen the spoilers. The spoilers, it's the worst part of it. Like, imagine if there was something hugely spoiler in The Great Passage, I'm sure people would have spoiled the heck out of it, because they were already watching it. And it is a huge issue to have. But thankfully, like I said, Amazon, besides, especially early on, they got over that. And I'm really curious what exactly was the cause for them to doing that early on, because I think it did hurt them. And I think it hurt, and it sucks because it's not that it just hurts the company. It's not that it hurts the people's trust in a company. We already hurt plenty of times with Netflix and their delays. It sucks that it hurts the show. That's the worst part. And that's what we had with, again, everything Netflix, especially things like Little Witch Academia. Having that delay hurts the show. And I want the show to be successful. I want Little Witch Academia to be successful. I want The Great Passage to be successful.
Well,
but
and they
didn't have it.
The stupid thing is Amazon, they didn't take it serious enough. Really, in all seriousness. Netflix, they are, strangely enough, they're taking it serious, if you want to call it serious, but they're just doubling and tripling down on the issue. And we don't even whine about it anymore, because they're obviously not going to listen. They're going to do what they're going to do, and they're going to do it their way. And if they do take it serious, I foresee a real big change to the way that content is provided to us in general. That's the frustrating thing. Funimation, if Netflix decides to go whole hog on anime, you might as well almost guaranteed, you'd be hard pressed to prove that Sony would go against Netflix for anime. It's just because out of the two,
At this point, they are. They have way too much money invested.
Because they have too much money invested. You're right.
They can't lose. They cannot lose at this point. It would be a huge upset.
Is Sony bigger than Netflix?
Oh, yeah. Netflix is not really... I think Netflix has been losing money for a while now.
Well, yeah.
I think they've been struggling for a long time.
They started struggling the moment that
Disney left them, they started struggling. So if you go way back there when that happened, they've been struggling ever since then.
Technically, Sony is losing money as well. So don't automatically
assume
that.
But they have hardware, and they are making boatloads of money from that. Sony is being kept afloat by their hardware easily. That's their moneymaker, and that's why they can throw money at things like, you know, the acquisitions and stuff. But I'm going to disagree with you. I'm going to say that you should correct yourself a little bit. I think that Amazon was taking it serious. I think probably what you mean is they weren't taking it serious enough. Like, they could have taken it more serious. Because I think they did a lot, but it is one of those things where, as a fan of the genre itself, you would have wanted more. Like, honestly, I would have liked them... I think this is one of the biggest issues, and I'm glad I remember this. One of the biggest issues that they had, the Amazon strike had in general, and anime strike had in general, was you didn't know where to find crap. Like, we had to go find it for people. Like, that was one of the big bonuses to our simulcast schedule thing that we do on a regular basis. We made a page on our website where you can figure out where all the shows are, because we had, like we mentioned earlier, 7 different services offering anime, so people needed to figure out which ones they were going to subscribe to that year, that month, or that season. And what was the biggest reason that was a benefit to people? To know when Amazon had stuff and how to find it, where the link was. We had to literally link it to people. Hey, here is Cabinary the Iron Fortress. You can find it by clicking this link. You couldn't find it by just going to the site, going to Amazon Prime, or going to Anime Strike, and just seeing it pop up on your screen. It was so difficult to find things. And whenever you went to, like, the Amazon app, you had nothing but just, like, you know, Western shows and... you know, shows from across the world all over your screen, but finding anime in there, okay, let me go look in the anime genre. A bunch of old, you know, 15-year-old shows. You couldn't find Cabaneri. I just want to watch Cabaneri the Iron Fortress. Or I just want to see what you guys are offering this season. If you go to any other service, go to Funimation, go to Crunchyroll, go to Netflix is also kind of in the same boat as Amazon, let's be honest. You couldn't find a section that said simulcast, current simulcast, recently posted. It was so difficult to find. And like I said, the way that we found it is I had to go in, look for what was at what locations, find the ones that weren't listed yet, and then search them on Amazon. I had to go through all the shows that I could not find elsewhere and search them manually one by one, get the link, and save it. And that is absolutely terrible. So how can you expect The Great Passage to have been successful when people didn't even know Amazon had it? That's the question. Now, granted, they did make a Twitter account and stuff, and they were technically posting about things. But even then, there was a lot of silence there, and it didn't work in the end. And that was, like I said, one of the huge issues was discoverability. And even for, and that's the thing, even I even give Netflix credit for the idea that even though they don't have a section that says simulcast or, you know, this season or something like that to indicate, hey, you're an anime fan, this is what's currently airing, jump on it right now. At least Amazon will throw it up the front page. You know, here is, you know, Pacific Rim. It's up now. Pacific Rim is at, the Black is now up. Come check it out. I don't necessarily see them doing that for, hey, guys, hey, normies, Psyche K's up. So even they still have that issue. But the discoverability, I think, was a huge issue with Amazon. And that's where I think, like I said, to your point, I think that they were obviously taking it serious. I think the people that were working in their department for that were taking it serious. I just wonder how much time they had to do it. I wonder if it was, just, again, like you mentioned earlier, if it was just a passion project for somebody in their video department. Hey, yeah, I'm always putting up all these other TV shows. I would love to be able to put some anime in here. I would love to be able to market some anime. And then finally they got the okay to do it. And then it's like essentially them walking into the room with all of the big players, HBO and stuff, all like walking around going, yeah, all right, let's put this up on the front page now. Let's put this up on the front page. And then he walks in with, you know, The Great Passage and going, hey guys, can we put this over? Can we put this on the front page? No. Okay. I'll. And everybody's looking at them like, get that weeb crap out of here. We don't need no anime stuff in here. We got this big show that's going to be hugely successful. It is, you have the playing field that was Amazon Prime was a playing field filled with Hollywood. And to expect anime to play in that field and get a seat at the table is impossible. And that's where I said, I think the better way to put it is they didn't try hard enough. Is I almost feel like they should have just said, not here's a channel within our platform. Here's a separate channel altogether. Let's make a new app. Let's make a completely, and I think they could have done this easily with the back catalog and especially with what they were hitting with out of the gate in 2017, January, when they had that, you know, the six titles, they could have easily launched a platform, said, here is Anime Strike. Here's an Anime Strike app. Download it. Watch your shows here. Don't worry about a Prime membership. It's $5 a month. Download this app. You have The Great Passage, Vivid Strike, Chi Sweet Home, Chin Chan. You have Scum's Wish. You have Onihei. You have the back catalog of Nonoha. You have 1,000 anime titles from the past on there as well, and films. Do you think that would have been unsuccessful? Do you think people would have not taken note? Do you think people wouldn't download that immediately? I would have. I would have totally been on board with it. That would have been a huge success. That would have totally put them in the market. That would have made them a competitor easily, sitting right next to all the other ones. Because again, back then, in 2017, yeah, we technically were starting to build up to that, you know, gobs of anime per season. But that was a huge, back then, that was a huge chunk of what was being offered that year. Am I wrong? Are you disagreeing with me criticizing your way of saying that?
No, I don't disagree with you. The problem is more along the lines of when I say taking it serious, it was more along the lines of just like, to me, the way that it looks when it almost looks like they're dipping their toe in the water. Are we going to do this? Okay. I mean, if you stop and think of it, like I said, with Netflix, if Netflix actually takes this serious, they could very easily bump Sony off the chart. Now, I agree. Both of them they're both titans either way, and so it's not like they're not going to go down without a brawl. But neither of them think that anime is worth the time. Just like Amazon did not think it was worth the time. That's what I meant when I said they're not taking it serious, and not saying that they didn't dump a lot of money into it. I'm saying that when you take consideration of how big these companies are, all three of them are massive titans. I mean, just Sony technically looks like the bigger of the two, but they just technically, like you were saying, they have more assets. Netflix is more intellectual property. Amazon is a networking company. If you want to get real technical, all they do is they say, you send us stuff, we'll send it out for you. That's what they do.
Same with their television stuff is, you send us your shows and we'll put it up on here.
Yeah, exactly. When it comes to their books, they're doing the same thing. You send us the rights to author it or to make books out of it, and we'll put it out here for everybody to see. Audible, you do the thing, we'll put it up here on our platform. We have a platform. And Netflix is similar in the respect of, we have the platform, you give us your property, we'll sell it for you. So each one of these,
they eventually ran into is when nobody wanted to give them stuff anymore because they want to make their own platforms. Now they have to make their own stuff.
Yeah. And now you're the only one that is technically different is Sony, where they are actually making property and selling that property. And so they're the only one that's a little bit different. And so their financials do reflect that in a different way. But all three of them are massive corporations. I mean, we're talking, I guess, apples to oranges in a way, because when I say they're taking it serious, I mean, how much are they actually investing in this? Sony is the only one that actually, per se, is taking it serious. When it comes in respect, they're the smallest out of the three titans. And we're talking, okay, the little brother on the block compared to the other. Now, Sony will have the best recovery rate because they have other things that they're putting their money into in a different way, because they have other things that they can rely on. I mean,
yeah, Blu-rays. They're diversified Blu-rays more than you can even talk.
Blu-rays are technically owned by Sony.
Not owned by Sony, but they're in the committee for it.
Okay. I just
don't want people to correct you. I'm just saying that.
Okay. meaning that they have the ability to make money off of pretty much everything. They are the most, they have the most streams of income. Netflix, if everybody stops
diversifying 101.
Yes, exactly. You've got it. Netflix, if everybody randomly decides to stop having subscriptions with Netflix, they're in trouble, and they have to change the way they're doing things, because they don't really have other streams of income. It's all their platform. Mm-hmm. Amazon is kind of more solid in that because they have other things that they're doing. Like I had mentioned earlier, they have Audible, they have Amazon, they have, they were doing books. Now they're going into they've been going into Whole Foods for a while. They're constantly doing, like Andrew said, diversifying. They're doing other things. So when I say take serious something, that's what I'm talking about, is each one of these companies and whether or not they're, how much of their, when they're testing the water, is it too hot or too cold for me? Can I actually make money off of this? And if they don't see a return, they're not going to take it serious. And that's what Amazon did. They dipped their toe into it. They didn't see a return and they were like, nah, it's not worth it.
But that's what I was saying. The frustration is the idea that they lose money on everything to make it successful, but they didn't do it with Amazon or anime.
Yeah. And if they had, could you imagine? That's what I mean by if they had taken it serious, what would have happened? And this is what Netflix, they're dipping their water and they're doing it at a slow pace. And that's what I'm saying. The frustration is they're slowly elbowing everybody and saying, okay, I'm at the table, get out of my way. And the problem is we really don't like the way they're doing it, but there's nothing we can do because they're too big. And if they get serious, forget it. I do think Sony would scrap with them because they have, like Andrew said, they have too much to lose. They've effectively dumped a good few 10% of their company went into buying a whole nother company. That was a massive investment. And so if they lose at this point, that's a huge loss. So they're not going to go down without fighting.
And that's why I think Netflix is technically taking it, you know, equally as serious, I think, than as Crunchyroll. I think they're just taking it from a different angle. You have Netflix is dumping lots of money into exclusives. And that's how they're taking the angle. Netflix isn't going, well, they are technically here and there doing it. Netflix, for a majority of their stuff, isn't going after, you know, simulcast. They're going after, let's pay into making a show. They're basically, you know, jumping into production committees. They are being producers in a sense. So they're just not going out there and going, okay, there's 30 titles coming out this next season. Let's get them all. They could do that.
Yeah,
they haven't been doing that. They have been going the route of let's you know, pay for an exclusive. Let's pay for this company to make a show and we'll have it on our platform. They're taking it from a completely different angle than everybody else is, and I think that's what makes it seem like they are an oddity to everything
else. Crunchyroll and Funimation were doing the same thing. I mean, that's the whole Crunchyroll exclusive thing where they were getting themselves on the freaking production committee because we were I think we were pointing out that they were trying to mimic what Netflix was doing, or were we pointing out that because it seems like we had noticed it very quickly when they started doing it. And it seems like they were doing it before Netflix, but who knows? It could be the same.
I want to say around the same time, so it's hard to really remember which one who shot first. But like I said, it is technically them taking it really serious. I think that Netflix is dumping a lot of money in there. And they are technically getting a show a season, basically. Maybe, you know, two or three, but I think a lot of their money is in those, you know, those exclusives that they are getting locked down, those big titles that they are getting to where it drops worldwide on a set date, which, yes, again, we do not like. It's just a thing.
Yeah,
you have to kind of deal with it.
And that's what I was saying is it's frustrating that they if they were to do what they could do. Like you were saying, yes, they could full on buy out the entire season. And what's Sony going to do? Yeah, I agree that
Aniplex
they would
titles.
Yeah, they would
just Aniplex titles is all.
They would get to scrapping because they would have to take it serious. And right now they don't. they don't necessarily have to take it serious because it's a bidding war. Whoever has the better connections is probably getting it. But I'm sorry, if Netflix got serious and said, okay, I want to buy all of the shows, what's Sony going to do?
Have Aniplex titles. A1 Pictures titles, all those ones. But no, it is funny because it's one of those things where I do know that there is some groups, some committees that will only work with certain companies. Cause I think there was a time, I think somebody had posted an interview or something like that at some point that did kind of point out the fact there is sometimes these companies, they don't like Netflix. When Netflix walked in that door, they didn't like them. They chose to stick with what they were currently doing. And so I think there is something to be said about a relationship that maybe, you know, Crunchyroll or somebody had with these companies that probably kept them, you know, continuing on. Like, you have to admit that there is something to be said about a company that, yes, technically did start out as a pirate company, but went through the efforts of making it into a legit thing and then bringing a large sum of money into these companies' hands before a show even aired. There had to have been a huge positive that was created from that. But there is only so long you can go before money starts talking louder than that.
Yeah.
And Netflix, you know, you can make an argument for now how they're doing, but especially back then, and we know back when they still had Disney and stuff, they had gobs of it to throw at things. And they're still doing that. They're still throwing gobs of money at stuff. It's just, how long can they do that, and will that money continue to talk is the big question mark. And it's funny because Amazon, of any of them, technically is doing the best. They have so much money, and they could have easily had thrown that in that direction, but they never really... I think they did, but in my mind, I think it was a thing of like, okay, well, we'll put this much money towards it, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. That's where I think that they didn't take it serious enough. I think they put limits on themselves, and again, they weren't willing to lose money to gain money. They weren't willing to put that investment into it. And without that investment, you can't expect people to immediately turn to you within a year, and especially not with a double paywall. it's not doing you any favors. And I think a lot of that has to do with not understanding the market. I think. And we've dabbled in this topic here and there in this podcast, but I think the biggest thing is not understanding your market is the key thing. If a company in the future, or if Amazon comes back, or for other companies that come into the anime sphere, you have to understand your market. You have to understand your competitors. How is Crunchyroll doing it? Oh, they're doing it weekly, week by week basis. They're, you know, pretty dang spot on with releasing on day of airing in Japan. They're getting the materials before it even airs over there. They're getting it subtitled. They're getting it prepared. They're getting it on their website on day of. What is Funimation doing? They're offering dubs to people that want dubs. That's huge for a lot of people. People that can't, you know, have difficulty with reading. People that just want to enjoy the, you know, artistry and they can't read it fast enough. All that kind of stuff comes into play. This is what Funimation is offering. Understand what your competitor is doing. What is your key main number uno competitor? Piracy. Understanding piracy. Understanding why people go to piracy. And putting into things into play that will combat that. This is like one of the biggest issues that we have with Netflix is not understanding that. When you have something like Violet Evergarden available with subtitles in Japan... And it's a popular show. It's from a popular studio. Not understanding that you need to have that available day one is ridiculous, because what happens? Your main competitor gets it. If you're not going to supply it, your main competitor, piracy, is going to supply it. Having the understanding of that market is important. Again, like I mentioned earlier, the staying power. Understanding that what people want is the now. People want the new shows that are coming out. They want to be in the conversation. As good as it is for a lot of people that want the older titles, it is not enough for the fandom as a whole. If you want Crunchyroll numbers of subscribers, you cannot expect to get that without what Crunchyroll is offering, which is a lot of titles. Or now, technically, Funimation.
I am understanding what the fandom wants. I'm absolutely dumbfounded that Netflix does not get that. I don't understand that. I wish I could get a concept of, because they have so many water cooler type shows, and how they don't capitalize on that is beyond me. I don't get that at all. Because they had Stranger Things. They have the and I know that that's a, I personally have not watched it, but I know it's a water cooler show. Oh, how yeah. How is it that these companies have not figured out that concept? Water cooler.
And that's so frustrating. Because Amazon understands that, and they did that. They got a lot of flack for it. That's so weird, because it is. There's so much mixed messaging on the dump versus the weekly, because what was the big stink here recently with Amazon with weekly releases? They did it with The Boys. And what is their review show? People absolutely livid that they were doing week releases of The Boys. And what kind of message does that send to a company like Amazon? I fully expect that if Amazon gets back into anime, they might switch to full dumps. And I hate that, because of the flack that they got from The Boys. The Boys, they had it recorded, but they wanted... What Amazon, and I think they even released a press on this, so hopefully somebody, if you want to make sure, you can probably go double check it. I think I remember them releasing a press on it where they wanted it to be a water cooler talk. Because what was I had that issue with Stranger Things. I watched Stranger Things with several coworkers at the time. And what was the issue that we all faced? Every single one of us had a different schedule. One person was able to watch through it all in one night. One person watched it in over a week span. One person never got around to finishing it. So we couldn't have the water cooler talk, because it was a huge investment to watch all of those episodes and every single one of us be on the same page at the same time. And okay. That's the issue with The Boys. You got to have one episode release and everybody talk about that episode. What happened in that episode? What happens when you have a full season dump? You don't want to talk about... You talk about the ending. You know, it's too difficult to remember what happened in the first episode to talk about it.
And we had that with Walking Dead. We've had that with I remember it was really big to do the water cooler talk with Lost.
Oh yeah.
What was it? Another one that came out recently, Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones
was another one. There's so many shows that if you can get a community doing the talking, guess what? Your show goes crazy.
Walking Dead had an entire after show block devoted to talking about it.
Yeah.
And I bet they made a fortune on the actual commercials for that period of time. It kept people on that channel. We did it. It's an easy get. But the thing that frustrates me so much about this whole dump thing, whether, you know, even though I understand with, I'm of two minds with Netflix. If it is something that they are putting worldwide full dump, I'm actually more okay with that. My frustration with Netflix comes in when there's shows available in Japan on a weekly basis,
yeah,
and we have to wait for the dump. That's what's stupid. That's what causes piracy, and that's what breaks the fandom from being able to enjoy a show, and I think what makes a show less successful in the West. People just aren't going to watch it. They're going to watch the new show that comes out that season when they finally dump it. But what frustrates me the most is the lack of the episode-by-episode conversation that can be created. Could you imagine if Wonder Egg Priority dropped in full? We would have had the fun of discussing what is going to happen next. Oh my gosh, this episode, this one right here, was amazing, and we talk about what happens in that episode. Whereas if you watch the entire season in one go, again, the conversation's in the ending. If you had Game of Thrones the entire last season dumped at once, people weren't going to talk about, you know, what happened with this battle or what happened in this point, this
truth be told, getting taken out.
They would talk about how terrible the ending was.
Yeah, truth be told, it probably was best that they didn't release it in the dump. Because
and
you,
there would have been
had
a lot of people that would say, no, don't watch it. I just watched the entire season. Don't watch it. Because I think that happened. Somebody leaked the actual ending.
There was a lot of people
who didn't watch it.
Yeah, there was a lot of people who debated on whether or not it was true. They were dissecting interviews and deciding whether or not it was actually true. If the actors were disappointed with how it ended,
the script itself.
Well, no, I know there was leaks on the script, and people were debating on whether or not that was true. Then there was people who were dissecting actual interviews with the actors and debating on whether or not that the script was true based on the reactions of the actors. That's how extreme it had gotten. And then you finally got the reviews of the people who had actually finished it. And it was, people were debating on what, I mean, I think we were debating on whether or not we should even finish it, because we were seeing how the ending was going. And it was like, I'm not really sure. Andrew, do you feel like you really want to watch the ending? And we ended up finishing it, and we were even disappointed. It was like, and then
it was,
of course,
a completionist at that point.
Yeah. And then there
you wanted the achievement for finishing it.
And then there was the discussion about whether or not you were a good person if you liked it or not. And it was like, oh gosh, people, just
you're
just
one of those people that like the prequel movies for Star Wars, aren't you? Oh, like what you want to like, it's fine.
I'm one of the few that actually liked the prequels. I'm sorry, guys.
It had its points. But I'm not a huge Star Wars fan.
I didn't like Jar Jar.
So.
I will agree. I didn't like Jar Jar.
Yeah, that's the unpopular opinion of somebody that likes Jar Jar. If you like Jar Jar, yeah, that's where people start questioning you. That's where a lot of people are, I could go with you for a lot of the stuff, but I can't go with you on that one.
Well,
it's the whole thing of, I like this part of it. Yeah, that technically was a good thing.
Okay,
yeah, I like this part of it. Yeah, I technically like that. Yeah, that was a pretty good thing. Hey, I like Jar Jar too.
I'm gonna stand on I liked the story, not so much the acting. There's a big difference between story and acting.
Yeah.
Okay.
I agree. That was a huge stumbling block for me. But again, I'm not a huge Star Wars fan, so it's harder for me to accept flaws.
Let's
when
not
I'm
even
not
talk
really
about the
it.
Sequel series. So we'll just leave it at that.
That's where Chris can't agree with you at all. Anime Strike. You tried. You gave it the good try. Is there anything else that have we basically dissected the crap out of this?
I don't know. You have a whole section down here. I don't know if we've actually discussed, which is the other companies.
Yeah, the last thing I guess I would hit on with Anime Strike is I do want to acknowledge that there was a lot of really good titles. And that goes back to my point that I made about with, you know, especially with Netflix, is that huge hurt that we have when something is really great but dies by availability. And again, you can pirate all this stuff, and people did. But the problem is a majority of people don't technically pirate. I know that's a shock to people. I don't believe that a huge majority of people pirate. I think that the accessibility of a subscription service is equally as enticing as pirating. Because nobody wants to, let's all be honest, nobody wants to go to a random website, get 50 million ad blockers, and watch something on somebody else's server that could either have issues or quality issues. It is easier to just get it from the licensor. It's easier. And when you have something, a majority of people watching on Crunchyroll, and it just doesn't show up on the screen, it's going to get missed. They're not going to go out of their way to find it. There's a lot of people that just don't even know what's coming out each season. They just whatever pops up. So I do want to acknowledge that there is a lot of good titles that were there, and I'm thankfully a lot of it's getting picked up by other companies. I know one of the biggest early ones was when Crunchyroll got Cabaneri. They even did a actual physical release of it. And so I guess I want to point out, and some of them I don't think have even been picked up by other companies, but I think that people should still at least keep them in their notes so that when somebody else does pick it up, they can check it out. Cabinet of the Iron Fortress was definitely an easy one. We loved it to death. We watched it on a week. We watched through the entire series every week, every episode. So it's episode one. We watched episode one again, then episode two. We watched episode one, two, and three. We kept watching through the entire series. That's how much we enjoyed it. Scum's Wish was okay. Was okay.
I liked it.
Yeah. Psychano, I have an enjoyment for that one. I think that's a great series. I've always enjoyed it. Of course, I think most people that watched the first season probably went out of their way to try to find the second season, even though it was on Amazon. Inuyashiki had some moments, but I think that one had some issues as well. After the Rain is an easy sell.
That one wasn't my favorite.
It had some good moments, like the whole big screen TV in the middle of the street and him going da-da-da-da. So crazy. After the Rain was a fun one. I did enjoy that one in the end, and I think that one's a... I think that's one of those ones where I hope that they eventually gets a sequel, and whoever gets the sequel will bring in the first season. I want to say that it's on Crunchyroll as well. Or maybe Sentai. Maybe Sentai's the one that got it. Because I think Sentai did a physical release of it.
Yeah, that's one of those. That's one of those that's kind of a lost gem in there. If it isn't somewhere else, I think it actually is. I couldn't tell you where though.
What to Koi was amazing. I really did enjoy that one. I think that's another one that I believe that Sentai picked up. But that's also getting a sequel here soon. So if anything, hopefully if somebody hasn't, they will pick up Watakoi. Because that was a fantastic series. It was just way cute rom-com about otakus. Vinland Saga was pretty amazing as well. That's another one that I hope gets a sequel eventually. And whoever gets that will get the first season as well. Chris really enjoyed Grimmar Zero. I enjoyed a lot of aspects of it. I think it just kind of didn't keep up the pacing on that one, I guess. Raise the Bahamut was a lot of fun. Definitely that. Now the sequel, and I think that's the sequel is what they got. I don't remember if they got the first one. I think they got both of them. The sequel wasn't as good, but the first of Raise the Bahamut was a lot of fun. It's just a really fun action adventure show. So, yeah, definitely recommend that one. Girls Last Tour got a lot of fandom on that one. I wasn't a huge fan of it, but I did love the world. I love the exploration of it. So, that one's a good one as well. Recreators, I know a lot of people didn't like it. I loved it to death. I think Chris enjoyed it too.
Recreators, or was that Recreators. The one where they were writing?
Yeah, the characters they created came to the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Swan on Hiroyuki music, amazing. Land Illustrious is an absolute gem. No pun intended. Land Illustrious is a fantastic show, and I hope that one as well gets more adaptations. I know they have all the assets, and the assets was a huge part of their creation of that show. So hopefully they eventually get a sequel going for that. Onihei was a gem for us. We really enjoyed it. Very much a period piece.
It's only that way because nobody else has paid attention to it yet. Yeah, I think
because it died there.
Yeah, because yeah, we were making a joke about the fact that it now suddenly everybody's going to have heard about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait, to be specific, there was one particular person that I had. We were talking to that. We were saying you need to go and watch this. You will love this. And then when that person was doing a review,
what's an onihei?
What's an onihei? Never heard of it. We've only been telling you about this for the last 2 months.
You love it. You're a period piece lover, and you missed it. What's an onihei? That's like permanently burned in the back yes. of my head. I always hear that, like vividly hear that. What's an onihei? Oh my gosh, I cannot believe you just said that. Anonymous Noitus, I think Chris liked that. I didn't like it, but I did like the premise a lot.
I did like it mostly because it was kind of a punk bandish type thing.
Yeah.
And I thought that they had excellent artwork for it and all that stuff. And I thought it was a good story.
Yeah. Princess Principal was fun. I think it had its moments. It was just kind of cute girls doing spy stuff. So it was a fun watch, and that's another one that Sentai has, so you can get it from them. And Sagrada Reset, I don't know. That one's a cross-age. That one's a cross-age show. I loved so much about it, and I hated so much about it. I think it was too long, though. I think it was way too long. I think that was a two-core. I don't know. I think I liked it, but there was a lot that I hated about it. So
it seems like that was one that I really wanted to like, and I was had some mixed good on characters. It too.
There was a character in there that I absolutely loved her story. And there was a couple of stories in there that was really cool, too. It was essentially a town with people with abilities. What it did with the abilities kind of... It wasn't like kids with abilities kind of thing, you know, haha, superpowers. It was kind of a... It was making every single one of them into a very strong, dramatic beat. And like I said, there was some characters in there that were really fantastically told. Like, there was one main girl that I thought was easily the reason why I did enjoy certain aspects of that show. It's just a lot of the other aspects were bleh.
It's a shame. It looks like it's one of those that got lost in the give up. No, it's the Prime. No, it's still on Amazon.
Yeah, some of them are getting picked up elsewhere, but a lot of them are just kind of being left. And that's what surprises me, and it's like it's almost as if somebody is listening to us from Crunchyroll, because it's like, of all of these titles, onihei, it's like, we should probably get onihei. Why? I keep hearing somebody talk about it over and over again. I want to say that Sagrada Reset was picked up by Sentai as well. Yeah, it looks like it's for sale. Yeah, Sentai got Sagrada Reset.
Did it?
Very odd choice for cover art.
I didn't find anybody.
It's like they used the light novel artwork or something for the cover. The characters don't even look like that. It's fine. It's artsy. It's artsy. It's fine. But yeah. Yeah, you're right. Is there any other ones in there that I skipped past? I kind of just ran through the ones I know that we talked about before.
No, I think that was most of them.
Yeah. Okay. Iron Girl's Machiavellism was okay, too. It was very goofy, etchy stuff. No, there is another section I have at the bottom, but we kind of pretty much pulled stuff in from down here. So I guess the points that we did miss, yeah, I technically made a section that's essentially... I didn't want other companies to be off the hook. We're going to come in here and talk about what Anime Strike did wrong. We talked about what Anime Strike did right, correct, technically. But yeah, there is technically still the conversation of what has other companies done that we feel need to be fixed. And I think it's good because, again, going back to my earlier comment on if Amazon is possibly listening to this or other companies listening to this going, yeah, what did Anime Strike do right or wrong that we can possibly figure out? I think it's important to kind of acknowledge that other companies do things incorrectly. We've already mentioned before Netflix holding simulcasts and doing full dumps, which is absolutely not doing well for the market. Netflix technically does have the syndrome of, you know, not offering enough to pull the fandom. I think if you want a lot of anime fans... All we watch is anime. we're a prime example of that. I just don't care to watch anything else. This is what I put my time to. and you can't really expect somebody to jump over to get a Netflix subscription if all you're offering is one full show dump in a season. And now, technically, with the in the winter and spring, they do it a lot, but especially in the fall and summer, there's just Netflix isn't really offering anything except for those held simulcasts that we love so much that they do.
Yeah, Hulu. I kind of wish that they would figure that out. I mean, one of the frustrating thing is I wish I could grab the guy who's in control of this whole Netflix thing and say, look, here's the thing. The people who are going to binge the show, because that's what they're trying to go for. The idea is that we want you to be on our platform as long as possible. Gotcha. I really do get you on that. But here's the frustration. The people who you are targeting is the ones that are like me and Andrew and a lot of the people who listen to us. These are the people who you are targeting. They are the people who want to listen, to watch a show constantly. Now, I get it. There's a lot of people who will just binge a show. And that's a lot of what Netflix does, is that people go on there and they binge a show, they watch it all at one time and be done with it. Just because you have decided to hold and dump an entire season doesn't mean that your target audience isn't there. And if you were to go ahead and take care of your target audience, which is us, who likes to watch the show every week, doesn't mean the people who your other target audience, the main group, isn't going to get it the way you want it. Does that make sense? If you go ahead and give it to us drip, 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 one episode a week, that doesn't mean that the people who like the binge an entire show all at one time, they're still going to be able to do that.
Yeah, and here's a sad reality, and to play devil's advocate against you, is the sad thing is we're not their target audience.
Yeah.
Their target audience is their 200 million subscribers. Their target audience is not 3 million subscribers from Crunchyroll.
I agree with you. I agree with you as a in a meta sense. In a meta sense, a grander scale, what they are trying to do, okay, is we want everybody to do this. And that's so in a way, you're right. However, when they started bringing in anime, the idea was to get an underserved target audience, which is us. That underserved target audience consumes our shows in a different way than their main audience. So yes, you're right. Their main audience does not watch anime that way. We do. So yes, there was a underserved target audience that they are trying to serve. That target audience,
assuming that their target audience was Western anime viewers. I think their main target when they made Amazon Japan was, let's have Japan watch anime on Netflix. That's what I'm getting at. And it's easy to think that that is what they're going for, but I don't think that's what they're going for, unfortunately. And again, it goes back to the Boys syndrome, where they believe that people want, like with The Boys, they want the full thing to be dumped all at once so they can binge it.
And in Japan, they are doing it the right way, and they're doing it one episode a week. So obviously,
the television aired shows, yes, they are. But I think that is mainly because it's having to air on television over there, so they're having to do it anyways. I think if they had an option to not do that, I think they wouldn't do it.
Very likely, but that's my point. They're trying to serve an audience of people who like anime, and that is, I guess, it doesn't really matter. That is a different type of consumption of the anime. They're trying to include a new audience and change the way that audience is consuming the product that they're trying to deliver. That's my point, is it's they're trying to include a new audience and change that audience at the same time, and that's not going to work. But and repeating myself now, so.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. It's just the troubling thing is just kind of trying to keep it in perspective of what I feel they're doing, and it goes back to your point you made before, where not taking a certain thing seriously and being kind of out of touch with what the fandom wants itself doesn't do it any service. And it's like, it is, again, I keep bringing it up because I think it's a prime, it's an easy example, and it's right there, and it happened recently, is having that example of the outrage that was around The Boys on Amazon doesn't help the perspective of companies like Netflix to want to even do that. Like, we're doing just fine. We're upsetting, you know, this fandom, but could you imagine that my mentality goes to most people when they go onto Netflix, they have a full season and they watch it. The troubling thing is to keep it from a perspective of Joe Schmo who goes on Netflix and they see Psyche K, what is this? And they click on it and they have one episode. And they're like, what is this, a movie? It's just one thing in this list. And they click on it and they watch a 20-minute thing and go, wait, that's it? Okay, that's weird. So, yeah, you technically can offset that by having something at the end of there. This is a simulcast. Episodes will be dropping weekly. Please check back. Add this to your list now, ? And then somebody can go, okay, yeah, I just watched the first episode. It's like, okay, it was really hilarious, and apparently they're releasing it weekly. Cool. Hope it pops up. And then have it work like Crunchyroll or something where when the next episode pops, guess what? Boom, it pops in their list saying, here's the next episode. I mean, they technically do that with things like Hulu and stuff. I mean, why can't you do that here? It knows that you watched, you know, the first season of a show they full dropped 2 years ago because they'll tell you. I've had it tell me, hey, here's the next season of Seven Deadly Sins. It's up. Even though granted then it's like, yeah, it was out 2 years ago. It does tell you they do have the systems in play. Why not both is the question mark. Why not both? I did make my argument about their after full dumping and avoiding The Boys drama for the 200 million. Why not make it easier for the 3 million? What's to say the 200 million doesn't want to be able to see Psyche K on a regular, on a weekly basis? What's to say they don't want to see, what's to say they don't want the water cooler talk of an episode by episode release of, you know, Seven Deadly Sins? I'm of two minds, but I do, like I said, I kind of am trying to keep it, I guess, in perspective of the behemoth that is 200 million. Not so much the behemoth that is 300.
I do acknowledge what you're saying, that technically, from a meta perspective, their target audience is the 200 million or whatever have you. And all they're trying to do is include the next 2 million into the 200 million. But in that meta perspective, you can't forget that technically that's a 3 million that they're trying to include in that 2 million or 200 million.
Yeah. And sadly, their primary market is Japan, and they're getting served it weekly. They're getting it. And they're getting it with English subtitles. And they're getting it with English subtitles.
Something else that is not technically on your list, but should probably be mentioned, is the hit and miss on physicals. If you want to jump on that one.
Yeah, technically. I mean, Amazon is technically the worst of that department in that they not did a single one of them. Crunchyroll and Funimation had to do a few of them. But, yeah, that's technically a big issue with Netflix. Now, granted, again, and we're going back to Japan, Japan is getting them, and thankfully some of them are getting pulled over to the West. I mean, Be the Beginning got a release. I believe Anime Limited was doing a lot of them, and I think a lot of that was kind of grandfather, or not really grandfather, but kind of, you know, shoved, you know, pushed over to our direction. Like, hey, we did it over here. Why don't you go ahead and just release it over there as well? And so there was like partnerships with Anime Unlimited to do that. So that is technically happening, but yeah, not enough for fans of physical releases like myself. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think anime is one of those one subsets that still technically loves that. Yeah, technically, with a lot of things, like, I mean, how many people went out and bought Stranger Things physical? Like, was it even available, and did anybody care to have it physical? But anime is, like, one of those few fandoms anymore. I mean, yeah, technically, like, Star Wars has it still. Anime has a group of people that just love to have physical copies of this stuff. And it's something that is technically dying in other mediums, but is still technically growing in our market. Books is the same thing. I'm sure there are statistics out there that digital, Kindle, audiobooks are the next big thing, but light novels, mangas are still a market there that still wants to exist. So,
and that's one of those things that is going to be really weird about how companies deal with that in the future. And this is a one of those meta things that is when you start to consider how the market is going to have to change at some point. It really is, because that's it seems like I heard a conversation of the idea of it book printing is shifting as well. And they don't know how to deal with it. Well, our the video game market is dealing with the same issue of how do you deal with a fickle market when it comes to games? You can't do what they did with the original gaming bust, where they Atari dumped games upon games upon games out into the market, and suddenly nobody was buying any games and they lost a whole bunch of money. And so, yeah, Nintendo had to revive it, and they did it by basically cornering the market and saying, you cannot produce a game without our permission.
You have to use our cartridges.
Yeah, you have to use our cartridges. And so there's different things that people are going to have to deal with, and we're getting to the point where we're going to have to face that very soon. Books are going to have to be changed, how we deal with books. That's a thing that I couldn't tell you how to deal with that, because you can technically buy it on a Kindle. But a lot of people still like the tactile feel of a real book. Manga is a good example. Comic books, if you want to go from the Western perspective, that's a very, some people like the tactile feel of it. There's a lot of people who love, I have a Kobo in my bag. I love it. But I do like the fact of having the physical version of it occasionally, because it is beautiful to have those pictures and actually see them. But if I want to clip through or flip through a book real fast, I don't necessarily have to have an entire room filled with shelves and shelves and shelves of books. I don't necessarily need to have that, but some of them I really do like, and I want to purchase those. So
yeah, preservation is a huge part of it. I'm bummed out right now because I kind of slacked off for a good few months on getting Grimgar, and now it's going to be difficult for me to get the last few because they just don't make many of them.
Exactly. It's a really weird place that we're in right now, where the market is shifting and we don't know, and we haven't found, and I'm talking from a perspective of outside of the world, or a 500-foot view of looking at everything, and I'm seeing no company has produced a solution to the problem of balancing between physical and digital. And that is going to have to happen at some point. We're going to have to find a way, because these companies are, all of them are saying, we cannot mass produce a book cheap enough at a small number. Somebody has to eat the bill. And that's the problem. And this is why these companies have such, why the anime industry has such a problem. Everybody knows what happened in the original anime boom or bubble, where they were it was money. You went to a company, they sold you a license, you produced 500 billion copies, and the Western market was sucking them up. Then suddenly people were going, these are crap anime, i.e. Heat Guy J, I think, is the one that everybody points at. I haven't actually personally watched it, but it's a perfect example of what do you do when you get a crappy anime? You don't want a crappy anime on your shelf, so you'll throw it away, and then you won't buy from that company again. They end up with a huge bunch of anime that they have to eat that bill. Somebody has.
Yeah, and they
to
were
eat
releasing
the bill.
Episode by like episode basis on. One episode on one VHS, and it was like $20 mm-hmm. plus dollars. And so when you produce, oh man, everybody bought Heat J one. Well, let's get part two out, and then nobody buys it because you had a lot of cases where you went to a store and you had all of them, but you didn't have one. Yeah. So it's like I can't buy this because I don't have the first one.
And there was so many things that happened then, basically what I'm trying to point out is that there is a shift coming, and we don't know how that shift is going to work out in our industry, and that is a huge problem. And I think that a lot of these companies are trying to deal with that in their own way, and yet they're missing a lot of the fundamental issues. And this is why we keep complaining at these companies and hoping that one of them will listen to us. We're trying to tell you, you have to take into consideration your market. Your market wants certain things, and you guys are totally glossing over it and missing the tree for the forest. You're looking at the forest and you're forgetting about what makes that forest happen is those trees. You need the trees.
You need the trees.
You need everybody. The trees. The trees
everybody
are important.
Needs the trees. Everybody needs trees. moving on, we had failures of Hulu and High Diver, pretty much similar, just kind of the slim pickings. Hulu does have a much larger pickings, but their problem is they have pretty much everybody else's stuff. They don't really have their own offerings, so there's no drive to Hulu. So if Hulu ever wants to make a serious push into the anime sphere, they're going to have to start buying their own stuff and not relying on other companies to do it, which I guess technically goes to I was meaning to bring up earlier, but we kind of went in a different direction, is my thought process is I do kind of wish that I kind of have always wished that we eventually got to the point where I think VRV is a great idea. VRV was a great idea at the time when they were having, you know, a good settling with, you know, Funimation and Sentai. There was one place you can go to where you could access multiple things. Now, granted, you had to buy a more premium package in order to unlock all channels, and they had a similar thing as, you technically didn't have the same thing as something like Amazon, because you could go for a specific channel. Like, you went to VRV, you could buy High Dive channel, and that's all you had access to, rather than having to pay for VRV and that. So you had the options there, and I always kind of wondered if and there's a hope that eventually we could get to that point with, you know, Sony and Netflix possibly working well together. It doesn't mean that you have to have six different subscriptions. There could be one service that licenses in all the companies to be on their service, and they pay for it. Like, they will pay Sony for their titles. They will pay Sentai for their titles, and you can go to one location for it. And I've always kind of hoped that that was a thing that would eventually happen, but what always ends up happening is Hulu works with Funimation, and that's it. And then Sentai Film works with Crunchyroll, and that's it. And then Crunchyroll works with Funimation, and that's it. And they seem to do this kind of partner thing, but never all together. And it's always been a frustrating thing because there was always the option that eventually they could get to the point where they could all be happy and work together and we can have less subscriptions. But it is what it is. Do you want to, we'll just go to the last one. Do you really want to do this again? Do you want to take on the last elephant in the room?
Who? Funimation?
Who else?
Or are we considering this Funimation / Crunchyroll at the moment?
I think a lot of the Crunchyroll, technically, they both have the same problems. Yeah, I guess. Well, but there's one of them in there that I don't think Crunchyroll does a lot, which is the last one.
Crunchyroll is they've done it. They just don't do it as bad.
They're not that bad.
They don't.
This is basically put a middle finger to the entire fandom.
Yeah, that's the issue. This is basically where I stand on Crunchyroll. Crunchyroll is the least worst out of all of these. So they have problems. It's just they're not as blatant. Then they seem to try occasionally. Now the reason why I think
they usually shut up when somebody speaks up.
Yeah, when it comes to going, because of the fact that technically Funimation bought out Crunchyroll, eventually the issues that is plaguing Funimation is probably going to eventually start plaguing Crunchyroll, which is criticizing your fans. Yeah, this is we did an entire podcast about stuff like this where it was like, you guys do realize your goodwill will only take you so far. You survive literally off of your fans. If you keep shoving our noses into the ground, eventually we're gonna. Well, I guess some folks do like that, but not all of us do. And eventually we will get tired of it and we will walk away. And there is a difference between, see, the sad thing is, yes, Andrew has mentioned earlier, and I kind of agree that the pirating aspect is not as bad as it used to be. It's gone to the wayside. A lot of people want to support this industry, and I think that a lot of people don't seem to realize that, especially in these big companies where they sit there and go, you shouldn't pirate. Yeah, it's not as bad as you guys seem to think. And the people who are actually, this is this stupid thing, the people who are, you're actually trying to criticize for that are actually not listening to you. So who are you talking to? Irony. It really is. But yeah, broken subtitles. This is a frustration that I've been having. Your Roku app sucks. Your app on Apple TV, it sucks. Something is broken. Fix it. You want money from us, but you don't want to spend the time giving us a product that is worth our time.
Hey, you missed one. What are your we website buying? Sucks. Yeah. Why do I have to go to my billing information to see my queue? Why? Mm-hmm. That doesn't make any sense. Why I have to see my billing information in order to go to the queue area?
Well, why? Like I said earlier, why do I have to literally start an episode, exit out of the episode, restart the episode? Because if I don't do that, then my subtitles are going to be screwed. I mean, hello? Changing the meaning of subtitles. This is a huge one for me. Like Andrew had mentioned earlier, simple little things. Sometimes you can kind of ignore it, but it does matter. I mean, just do the simple. Don't change anything.
And this is totally Crunchyroll. So yeah, I'll get on the Crunchyroll with this. I'll add Crunchyroll in here. What is this new stupid thing where, and I'm guessing it's just the same person every time. Stop putting Spanish as a translation for Japanese. That makes zero sense. Now, granted, yes, a lot of people know Spanish. They know what C means. but it doesn't make any sense to be watching English subtitles. And this is not me being like against Spanish again, but you have an English option. It kind of is a little puzzling to me that you would have Spanish in it. And it's not just like, you know, C or something. It's like, you know, they put like Rapido in there or something like that. It's like, there's going to be a lot of people that don't even know what that means. Honestly, there's a lot of people that aren't going to understand what that means. They're not going to understand what amigo means. It doesn't make any sense to me why you have that in there.
I bet you that keeps happening. Crunchyroll, I bet you Crunchyroll has a Spanish option if you choose to select that one.
And what is it going to have? French in it? It's not a thing that I don't want it. Not that I don't understand what they're saying. It's just one, there's going to be people that don't understand what it means. And two, it doesn't make any sense to be in English subtitles.
Why I'm going to need you keep it up, but I'm going to need a subtitle for my subtitles.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. I need subtitles for my subtitles.
Oh my gosh. Like I'm literally hurting for the few people in there that are like, What is that? And they look up in the English dictionary to figure out what that means, like amigo or something. And it's like, it's not in here. What is that word? I don't understand.
Yes, they have a Spanish a Spanish selection in the subtitles. They just have Espanol, like, Espanol, Latin American, and Espanol.
I wish I remember where. I wish I remember it. The recent one was in Spider, and I kind of wish I remember the spot so I can see if it I think it was like right where, I think it was at the time that Kumiko was decided that she wanted to fight the dragon and she was preparing for it. I think it was around that time. And so I need to check to see if they did something else with it in Spanish.
And it's silly. I mean, it's just flat out silly. I mean, yeah, we're poking fun at it a little bit, but it's really silly. I don't understand. It's like one of our biggest beefs with Funimation is the shoving kind of quote unquote politics into it. I know it's someday maybe I'll actually dig into that more, but when it comes down to it, it's a bigger issue of, you're not paying attention. You're trying to shove things in there that don't need to be in there.
And it's funny because I remember there's been a few times where people would, like, you know, when a gaming company decides to make a story that is basically has things in it that we considered, you know, politically charged, and somebody be upset about it, like putting politics in my games. And it's like, well, technically that's their story. That's what they want to tell. I'm perfectly fine with that. If you want to make a story that is about this political viewpoint, do it. That is what the art form is for. I'm perfectly fine with that. That's just like somebody making, you know, a portrait or an art form that has a political message. That's the message they want. And that's what they want to portray. You're fine. It's fine to do that. You know, some people that have opposing views might not want to play the game because of it. They might not want to look at the art form because of it. They don't want to look at that statue because of that message. That is your right to say it, and that is your way of expressing it. The problem is taking another person's artwork and translating it to say what you want it to say to make that political statement. That is infuriating. That is uncalled for, and that is disrespectful to the original creator.
And that's always been my biggest, the best way that I've ever been able to explain it is, I'm a spider. So what? Okay, I'm going there for that artwork. Okay. When you translate it, because I've heard the argument of, translating is an artwork. Okay, I'll follow you to a point.
It's narcissistic.
Okay, yeah, it's you are trying to weave your words. I got it. Okay, you're fitting the lip flaps. Okay, and that takes artwork. I gotcha. But if you're changing the fundamental meanings of things, I have a problem with that. It doesn't matter how much you fundamentally change things. You're still changing things. That is my biggest beef. Now, okay, you are taking their artwork and you're translating their artwork into your artwork. It's not your artwork. It's their artwork. So that's where I have been very neutral on the fact that just do the bare minimum to make it make sense. Nothing else. And I stay that. And why do you think that I don't like dubs? For several reasons. They change the meanings of things to make it make sense. They, other than the bad acting in general, I've never much cared for. I do know some people believe that it's the greatest acting of all time. Fine, I got you. They're great. To me, they're not. But I can't support them, which I would love to do, because of the fact that I don't like what they're doing. I don't like it. I'm sorry if you are making fun of your quote unquote fandom. If you want to call us fans, we are your customers, not your fans. And that's I think where they changed everything is they, like I said before, they shifted from customer. They shifted us from customers to fans. We're not fans. We are customers. By shifting us to fans, that makes us that it flipped the table. And so now we need you instead of you need us. You got this very backwards. And that's changed a lot of things. And I think that's really where the main issue is they, by doing that, you flipped the entire narrative, and that's wrong. But whatever.
Well, that's why I mentioned earlier about the whole narcissistic thing. It's that changing to the point where you think that you are the king, that everybody mm-hmm. is praising you, and that you are above everybody else, and that you are they're dependent on you, and that gives you that thought process that you could do whatever you want, and people are coming to you. And it's so funny because reading some of the comments made by some of these writers, and they're acting like they are a superstar. You're not. What people are coming here for is the writer of the source material, the writing of the screenwriter, the script writer. They're not here for you. Nobody cares about you. I'm sorry. we are thankful that there are people to translate and that it is available. But nobody is thankful of you. And it sounds so mean to say it that way. That's just like the idea of I like my burger, but it's not like I am going to die if I don't have the cook behind the counter. I'll go somewhere else.
Yeah.
We appreciate what you do. You're a hard worker, just like everybody else in the world. It's your job. Do it correctly and move on.
Burger flipper, you better watch it. You're gonna make some people mad.
Well, no, that specifically was going to the narcissistic person that thinks that everybody deserves them praise for translating something that
technically, in some cases
is already translated for them.
You're absolutely right. The tables need to be flipped back over. You did not Funimation. I've been here long enough. I know how long Funimation has been here. I know that you guys owe a lot to us, not me as one person, as I'm talking us as a fandom. You guys owe us a lot. So stop believing that you are the one in control. You are a gatekeeper, period. That's it. You have Funimation, or you have big bad Sony holding.
You're big bad Sony to a wall that has a little opening over the side that you have to acknowledge is there.
Yeah, you have the big bad Sony that has endless pockets, but eventually when you guys keep doing this and people stop paying you money, eventually Sony goes, our big deep pockets have a big hole in them, and they're going to have a problem when they go hunting for where that big hole is. And because you guys have burned every bridge because you think that you are the greatest ever, eventually you're going to have a problem in your hands. What are you going to do then? Because you won't have your quote unquote fans to rely on anymore.
Yeah. And that's the biggest problem.
I gotta let this go.
That's always been the problem, is understanding that it is shaky ground, even though we do acknowledge the fact that there is the convenience there, but eventually you're going to do something that's going to just set people off and they're just going to be done with it. And that's the thing that they always need to kind of acknowledge. So, yeah. I think that's it. Yeah, you pretty much hit them all really, really quickly and destroyed pretty much the entire foundation of Funimation and Crunchyroll. Congratulations, Chris. But yeah. I think we've successfully dissected Anime Strike and inconsequential efforts, every other streaming service, and possibly burnt bridges for us to ever talk to any of them. So that's great.
You think
but
so? Again,
but that's, like I said earlier, this is a look at the mistakes, let's try to improve it, let's do better.
Yeah, this is not better. Like I said before, I love Crunchyroll. I've been with Crunchyroll since the beginning. I absolutely love Crunchyroll. I was an early adopter. Funimation. I acknowledge what Funimation does. I've never... Funimation is a weird one because I have a love-hate relationship with Funimation. I don't despise them as much as it sounds like I do. I love Funimation for what it does. I just think there's key players that
screw up and it kind of makes the entire company look bad.
Exactly.
And they need to acknowledge that's a better way.
Yeah, if these people were to come to us and say, "Hey, we've been listening to you on the podcast. How can we fix this?" I can give you a million reasons how to fix it. But just sitting there going, "Well, those guys over there at A Talk of Spirit don't know what they're talking about," or the people on Twitter don't know what they're talking, or the people on Reddit, they don't know what they're talking about. We know what we need to do. Okay. There is, when you're selling a product to somebody, and this is, in a way, it's a catch-22. There is the idea of the customer doesn't know what they want until they have it. Steve Jobs is
famously known for saying that.
Okay. And I fully acknowledge that statement. I really do, because I believe that there is, in a lot of cases, sometimes...
That's how you invent
especially
things.
When it... Huh?
That's how you invent
That's how
things.
You invent... Yeah, I got you.
Partly is serving a need for something, and part of it is discovering something that people actually do need in the end, that they don't realize they do.
Yeah, and I fully acknowledge that as an artist, that sometimes you don't know... The story, or with an author, you don't know the story until you get through the entire story and get to the end and go, "Oh, hey, that was a really excellent story." Or when the final reveal of the painting comes out, I mean, if you were to look at the painting at the beginning, it probably looks horrible, and when you see the end result, it looks fantastic.
Yeah, because you always kind of go back to the front.
Yeah, so a customer, and if the customer is hovering over you the entire time, it's kind of painful to, I can attest to that. Building somebody's logo while they're sitting over your shoulder, it's absolutely painful. So I do acknowledge that concept. I really do. But, however, if there's flaws in the at times... When the final product has been reached, back off a bit. Okay, something is not right. Your customer base is saying, "Look, there's a problem here. Back off a bit. Figure out, lick your wounds, find out what's the problem, and fix the problem." Instead of doubling down and tripling down and quadrupling down. "Oh no, you just don't understand. You'll eventually like this." No, we're telling you. We don't like what you're giving us. Fix the problem. Oh, no, no. Here, let me quadruple down on it. Because obviously you don't understand what you don't like, so let's do more of it. No, we don't like it.
I just figure the thing that's always kind of puzzling is that aspect of hearing the outcry and then doing it again. It's like,
yeah.
Did we not feel the burn the first time you touched the fire? Are you gonna do it again? Ouch! Quit it! Ouch! Quit it! Ouch! Quit it! Ouch! Quit it! I don't know.
No, eventually, what's going to end up happening is they're going to say, "Well, if you don't like what we're giving you, go away."
Okay? And that's what they do. They've done that,
and
so.
That's what we're eventually going to end up doing is we're going to have a parting of the ways, and we'll see who really hurts.
Damn, Chris is throwing down the heat now. We should wrap it up.
Chris, I already told you to let it.
Chris is throwing threats. Throwing threats now. But yeah, that's our postmortem of Anime Strike and what other companies can learn from it and what they did wrong. I'm not sure what the heck I'm going to title this for, because I'm sure that saying something about other title services would probably get a lot more attention. But yeah, we'll see. Hope you guys enjoyed this postmortem, and hopefully we can do. No, I almost want to say hopefully we can do this for other services, but we might end up having to do it for Crunchyroll. We'll see. But I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. And as always, thank everybody for their support, both verbally and through our Patreon. We really do appreciate everybody's support through everything. And yeah, as always, definitely continue to support us through, again, word of mouth. Definitely is the best way to support us through subscribing to our YouTube channel, going on to, you know, podcast choice of like, you know, iTunes or Spotify, all those services. We thank you guys for listening, and we hope you guys enjoyed. I almost said watching. I gotta catch myself, because I say that much more now than anything. But anyways, hope you guys enjoyed, and y'all take care.
Oos.
It's Wonder Egg Priority Time. It's Wonder Egg Priority Time.